Hi, folks. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. Episode 293, to be exact. This is a practical show done by a practical guy, and that is me. I'm not a gunsmith or ex-law enforcement or ex-military. Just a regular guy, and, you know, I do some firearms training on the side. I have for a couple years. I team up with Ben Branham, who's got plenty of experience being in gunfights before, and we go out and we do some classes to people who listen to our show and so forth. But, you know, hey, the root of my existence is just an everyday guy who takes my Second Amendment rights seriously, and I'm just a family man, and this is pretty much a hobby that pays for itself and maybe even a little bit more. So what am I going to do this week? Well, episode 293, this is going to be kind of a mixed bag of topics, I guess, if you will. I'm going to talk a little bit more about my 1911 versus striker-fired experiment that I've been doing now for the past, I've been doing it about 8 months. It's a one-year experiment. So I figured I'd kind of give you guys an update on that and some more thoughts on that. I am going to talk a little bit about some of my thoughts on this tragedy in Ferguson, Missouri, the shooting of Michael Brown and so forth, and what's been going on with that. Because I see a lot of upsetting stuff being thrown around, not just in the media, but also in social media by people. And boy, I tell you, it's pretty disheartening to see some of it. But I'm going to talk a little bit about it and see if I can give you guys a little bit more of a positive spin on that, or a positive outlook on that. Let's put it that way. So let's get into the 1911 versus striker fired test first. Let me cover that. You've probably heard me mention that, in my opinion, my 1911, it carries very well. Now, I'm talking about my Sig Sauer RCS. And if you don't know what that is, look it up. Sig Sauer RCS 1911. They don't really make a traditional 1911. You know, Sig has changed the design a little bit, but I got to tell you, this gun is awesome, and it has been functioning very nicely for me. I had a few issues with it in the first couple hundred rounds, and that was mainly due to a weak recoil spring, and it wore out a lot sooner than I think it should have. I think it wore out about 250 rounds or somewhere around there. But since I've replaced it with a good quality Wilson Combat recoil spring, this gun has been tremendous. Now, there's some disadvantages to it. And, you know, folks, I hate 1911s. Right? Okay, did I get your attention? I don't know how the rumor started. It started, you know, 2 or 3 years ago that I hate 1911s. And that's not true. Even though I'm a big fan of Glocks and striker-fired pistols, and now a big fan of M&P pistols by Smith & Wesson, I don't hate 1911s. So, I'm not real sure how that ever got started. But it's just not true. So I've had John Hottaway on this show before, and, you know, he's a huge 1911 fan, and I'm more of a striker-fired pistol fan. But I decided at the beginning of this year, I decided that what I would do was I'd do an experiment, and I would compare my 1911 versus a striker-fired pistol, like a Glock or a Smith & Wesson M&P. So here's some more thoughts I have on that. First of all, as I mentioned, the 1911 carries very well because of its thin profile. And there's something about this particular 1911 that I'm using, the RCS. You know, it's got the officer size grip, so it's got the shorter grip than a standard 1911. You put 7-round magazines in it. If you want the magazine to fit flush with the grip, it's 7 rounds plus one in the chamber, so it's an 8-round pistol. It's hard to deny that the .45 ACP is a hard-hitting round. I'm going to get to that in a little bit. But this seems to carry well. You know, it's not real heavy in the grip. You know, one thing I'll say about carrying something like a Glock or a full-size M&P, the grip is real heavy because you got so much ammo in there. And with that heavy grip, it just doesn't seem to balance as well in the holster. This 1911 balances very well in the holster with that short officer's grip. Now, it's about a 4 1/3-inch barrel. I like that. I like that 4 1/3-inch barrel, especially if I'm going to appendix carry this. I've been carrying it strong side, about 330 position. But if I'm going to appendix carry it, the shorter barrel I like better. I also like the balance in the feel better. of it. And the only changes I've made is, like I said, I've put an ambi safety on it, and I've put a Wilson Combat higher quality recoil spring in there. And I think Wilson Combat says it should last about 1,500 rounds before having to change it out. Now, that's been the benefit of it. It carries well. It shoots well. It's extremely accurate. The trigger has broken in nicely. I think I've probably run slightly over. I think I've shot it a little over 500 rounds. So it doesn't have my 1,000-round trigger job, but it's got a 500-round trigger job. So that's what I really like about it. There's a few other things I'll talk about that I like about it. Here's some of my challenges with it. And I say challenges because it's not really, these aren't really dislikes. They're more or less just challenges. I was reading a blog. I was reading the Mad Ogre's blog. And go to madogre.com. I'm going to put a link to the specific article that George Hill wrote about the 1911. And I very much agree with this portion of it. One of the things he said is the 1911 demands loyalty. And he says you can't cheat on it. You have to be faithful to it. You almost have to marry the platform. And he's right about that. And that's one of the challenges I have. And he said, here's why. He says in almost every class that he's taught, where there was a 1911 shooter in it, he catches the guy, draw his weapon, push out from a high compressed position, and then, crush his trigger to no effect, presses the trigger to no effect, because he forgot to sweep off the thumb safety. And he says most of the people that do that, they do that because their primary guns are striker-fired pistols like Glocks, XDs, or M&Ps. They're not 1911s. Now, that has happened to me. When Ben and I were teaching up in Arkansas, we teamed up with John Hottaway and we taught Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced back in June. Happened to me one time where I forgot to sweep off the thumb safety. So the 1911 is a platform you have to marry. You have to get dedicated to it, and you got to train on it. And you got to train consistently on it. And, I got to tell you something. I used to not believe very much that... let me rephrase that. One of the reasons I've been doing this test is I wanted to see if it was true that you should stick with the same kind of a platform. In other words, if you carry a striker fired, train with striker fired, and only carry striker fired guns. If you like 1911s, single action guns with a thumb safety and a grip safety, then train with those and only carry those. And I wanted to see if this was really true. I wanted to see if I could switch back and forth. Striker fired, 1911, striker fired, 1911, switching back and forth and back and forth. And I wanted to try to see, is it a myth? Is it a myth that you have to stick with one platform, or is that reality? I'll tell you what I'm starting to find out. That it really is reality. It really is. And I've recommended it before. I've told people on this podcast and even people that I meet, hey, stick with the same platform. Right? Has anybody ever told you that? I'm sure you've heard that, right? Stay with the same platform. Or if you like the double action, single action guns, stick with that. So that you get used to the double action trigger pull first and then shorter single action trigger pulls after that. So I'm beginning to think that, yeah, that's not just myth. That's reality. Because I don't even want it to happen to me one time where I forget to sweep off the thumb safety. I don't even want that to happen to me one time. Because what if it happens when I really, really need the gun? So think about that. Another disadvantage that I have with the 1911 platform is you really can't go shorter than 4 inches and they still have an incredibly reliable gun. Most of the 1911s, the whole platform, we all know, the whole platform was developed to work with a 5-inch barrel and the corresponding slide length. The commander size, the 4 or 4.25-inch barrel, they've been made to work pretty well. But there's something about the little 3-inch 1911s. When you shrink that platform down that small, it sacrifices a lot of reliability. And I still think that's the issue today, even with the good quality 1911s out there. That's still the issue. So if you do the same thing with a striker-fired gun, if you take the full size and you shrink it down to a 3-inch, they're still incredibly reliable. I mean, look at a Glock 26. Look at an XD subcompact. Look at the M&P 9 compact. They're great guns, and they're extremely reliable. My M&P 9, I've run now probably, I would say, a couple hundred rounds through it, maybe. And it's awesome. My Glock 26, you know, how many rounds do I have through a Glock 26? Extremely reliable. So you shorten these striker-fired guns down to the subcompact size, and they're incredibly reliable. Look at the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield. Look how reliable that gun is with a short barrel. And basically, that's a shrunken-down M&P in single-stack form, and it's shrunken down. But when you shrink down the 1911s down to a 3-inch, they're just not proven to be quite as reliable, and I've seen it time and time again. So that's one of the disadvantages of the 1911 platform. The trigger is fantastic. The trigger is fantastic. One thing I like about 1911s, you have a shorter trigger reach. For people with small hands, the 1911s are better. I'll say that. I mean, the 1911s seem to be a lot better for people with small hands, especially if you have an adjustable trigger on yours. The reset is awesome. So, you know, it's the best trigger I've ever shot in a handgun. Let's just put it that way. And I have a lot of experience now with handguns. Not as much experience as some of you listening to this show, but, you know, been doing this since 2005. So, you know, 9 years now. I know some of you have been doing this a lot longer than 9 years, but that's my experience. And I've shot a lot of guns over the last 9 years. And, you know, and not just one or two magazines, but I've shot lots and lots and lots of rounds through lots of pistols. And I can tell you that there's no better trigger that I've ever shot than a 1911 trigger. I mean, so it's pretty easy to be pretty accurate with a 1911. And just about anybody can learn to shoot a 1911 with some practice. I will say the striker-fired guns like the M&Ps and the XDs and the Glocks, they're easier to get a new shooter shooting well with them. Now, I'm talking about 1911s mainly in the 45 ACP format. In 9mm, they're softer recoiling, but it's still a 1911. They still have to learn the platform. They still have to train to be sweeping that thumb safety off and to make sure they have the proper grip to disengage the grip safety. And I covered all this stuff in my safeties podcast several months ago. If you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to the episode that I did on safeties. But 1911s are very, very shootable. And it speaks to the pointability and the recoil control and the natural ergonomic principles of the 1911 that create better shooting. Now, another disadvantage I've been finding on the 1911, though. The bore axis on the 1911 is higher than most of the striker-fired pistols. Now, there's some striker-fired pistols, like, for example, the Springfield XD. That, in my hand, that kind of feels like a 1911. And the bore axis. And what I mean by the bore axis is, if you look in, for people who don't know what that means when I'm explaining it, it's basically where the barrel sits. Does the barrel sit up high in your hand, or does it sit low in the hand? How close is your hand to the barrel of the gun? In other words, the same level as the barrel of the gun. So when you hold the pistol, how low is that barrel down into your hand? Or how high is it? That's kind of what I'm talking about when I'm talking about bore axis. And on a 1911, it's higher than especially Glocks and M&Ps. You know, one thing I like about the Smith & Wesson M&P, Smith & Wesson's figured out how to make a striker-fired pistol with great ergonomics and a good grip angle and all that stuff for people who like, you know, if that's important to you, if grip angle is important to you. It's not important to me because I think grip angle is kind of one of those, it's like a golfing excuse, right? You know, a golfer has all kinds of reasons why he hits a bad shot. Shooters are the same way. They have all kinds of reasons why they fire a bad shot. Oh, it's the grip angle. Nah, no, it's not. It's not the grip angle. Okay, training can overcome any grip angle. But anyway, Smith & Wesson M&P, They have figured out how to make a good ergonomically friendly gun and keep that bore axis low. The M&P doesn't sit quite as low in my hand as a Glock does, but it's low enough. And a low bore axis, in my opinion, gives you better control over the pistol. And if you talk to any top shooter, or if you watch any video by any top shooter, they're going to tell you the same thing. Gives you better control, better recoil control, and just better control over the pistol with the proper grip. The M&P sits lower, and so does the Glock, a lot lower than a 1911. So there's less muzzle flip. Okay, so the higher the barrel is above your hand, the more leverage the gun has working against you as the projectile is fired. So you get more felt recoil. Now, custom gunsmiths have been trying for years to reduce the height of the bore axis on the 1911 or to reduce the recoil impulse of the 1911. Okay, most of them, sometimes they apply a different grip safety or they modify the rear of the frame to allow the web of your firing hand to be higher. Undercutting the trigger guard helps as well, so you can bring your hand higher up on the grip. But see, with a striker-fired gun, it's usually a lot easier to undercut the trigger guard because the striker-fired pistols, most of them are made with a polymer frame. So somebody that knows what they're doing can undercut that trigger guard to allow your hand to rise higher on the grip. In other words, lowering the bore axis. So that's a big advantage that I think that the striker-fired guns have over the 1911 platform. Now, I don't hate 1911s. I like them. I like them for a lot of reasons. And if you carry a 1911 and you train with a 1911, you're well-armed and you're in great shape. Because there's no denying that the .45 ACP is a very hard-hitting round. And there's no denying you got a marvelous trigger on that 1911. So there's no denying you can be very, very accurate, and you can be shooting a pretty hard-hitting, proven man-stopper over the years. But you have to marry the platform. You have to get used to it, you have to train with it, and you have to marry it. That's just not a marriage that I don't think I'm going to want to do that. The way this is playing out the last 8 months or so, it's probably not a marriage I'm going to want to get into, which is marrying a platform of a gun. Okay? So think about that. Let's take a quick break, and I'll be right back.
An exciting training opportunity is coming to Sioux Falls on May 16th and 17th, 2015, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. This 16-hour course is designed for the concealed carrier who is slightly more advanced but has never had any formal training outside of the CCW course. We start with the basics of handgun safety and marksmanship and quickly progress to some basic dynamic movement and defensive scenarios. Some scenarios would include shooting from cover and proper use of cover, shooting on the move, shooting steel on the move, defending hallways, one-handed shooting, the art of making hits quickly out of the holster, shooting a hostage taker, and more. You will shoot a minimum of 500 rounds of ammunition. Bring a quality handgun with at least 3 magazines, holster, belt, and magazine pouches. Revolvers and .22 caliber pistols are welcome. Both Bob and Ben are NRA-certified pistol instructors and have been for several years. Bob has been the host of the Handgun World podcast for 4 years and has over 120 hours of training under his belt. Ben has several years of Marine combat experience and several years of carrying a gun as an armored car driver. This class will be held in Sioux Falls May 16th and 17th, 2015, from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. both days. Cost is $350 per person, or sign up by December 31st and save $50. Look for the training link at handgunworld.com.
Okay, during the break, I also want to talk about the Pistol Fighting Dynamics course that Ben Branham and I are teaching November 8th up in the Dallas area. We're going to be back at Quail Creek Range November 8th, Saturday, November 8th, Pistol Fighting Dynamics, The Art of Making the First Hit. We're going to be doing a little bit of point shooting or instinctive shooting, whatever you want to call it, in that class. But there's a lot more that we're going to do besides just that in that class. We're going to teach you how to, it's been reported that the most important round that you fire is the very first one. So we're going to teach you how to draw effectively with speed and precision and effectively and make that hit and subsequent hits after that. So join us if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area or you're near Dallas-Fort Worth area. Join us for Pistol Fighting Dynamics November 8th. Go to handgunworld.com. Look at all my class listings right there in the menu. You'll be able to see them. You'll be able to read about the class, and there's a link there to sign up and so forth. So come join us if you're up in Dallas. Don't forget about Beyond Concealed Carry in California. October 18th, I'm going out to Northern California to the San Joaquin Gun Club, not too far from Stockton, California. So for all you Northern California area listeners, I'm teaching the signature course that Ben and I have put together, Beyond Concealed Carry, teaching that Saturday, October 18th. You can find that at handgunworld.com. And for you San Antonio area listeners, we're teaching another night fighting class, December 6th in San Antonio. Check that out. That's at A Place to Shoot. So many of you who have trained with us here in San Antonio, you know where A Place to Shoot is. If you haven't been to the night class, if you haven't trained with your handgun at night, it's a whole different scenario that I guarantee you you're not used to. And what do we find about defensive handgun encounters? A large percentage of them occur in low light or in the evening. So train. Take this opportunity to train and come to our night fighting class on December 6th, Saturday in San Antonio. Again, you can find details at handgunworld.com. And also want to mention Ben's doing an AR-specific rifle class. However, I've already received some emails, people asking me if they can bring something other than an AR-15. Yeah, you can bring an AK, you can bring an SKS, you can bring a Ruger Mini 14, something like that. That's fine. Bring it. If you have a pistol caliber carbine, bring that too. No problem. Ben's going to be teaching that. He's doing that one by himself October 11th. I'm going out to California by myself on October 18th. Okay, be right back.
An Australian law enforcement officer called their gun registration, quote, an elaborate system of arithmetic with no tangible aim. They also called its crime control use a fallacy. New Zealand police call their gun registration system useless. Canadian registration has cost 1,600% more than originally projected, and a top Canadian cop said it does nothing to take one illegal gun off the street. And in Germany, some people estimate that upwards of 80% of all guns there are still not registered. So why do some senators, and some presidents for that matter, think that it will work in America? Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, let's get to a listener voicemail. Forgot to mention, by the way, if you are not a member of our Shooters Club, you can join our Shooters Club. If you want to support the work that Ben and I do and you can't make it to one of our classes but you want to learn some cool stuff, we have excellent videos on the Shooters Club membership website. Just go to shootersclubmembers.com or handgunworld.com and click the Shooters Club page. For $75 a year or $8 a month, you can access all the training videos on a special website, and we'll send you a special password that you can use to access that. So just go to shootersclubmembers.com or go to the Shooters Club page at handgunworld.com. And last but not least, if you don't want to spend any extra money but still want to support my show, buy your Amazon purchases through my affiliate link. If you go to handgunworld.com and click the Amazon store, you will be able to use my link, make all your Amazon purchases off of my link, and you'll be, at the same time, not spending any extra money, but you'll be supporting my show because Amazon gives me a little bit of a commission when you make a purchase. Okay, so let's go to the voicemail for this show that I want to cover.
Bob, this is Brian from Alabama, or as John Holloway called me, that Ford lefty running a wheel gun at your Beyond Concealed Carry course. Hey, I've been catching up on some back episodes of your podcast and wanted to thank you and John for the compliments in episode 283 and 287 about my revolver shooting and reloading. I didn't know shooting a revolver at your class would leave such an impression. One thing a revolver will teach you is how to practice reloads over and over again. Speaking of revolver reloads, I think they would find a Masada Ube stress fire technique to be very valuable. That was actually the technique that I was trying to emulate as I was shooting in your course. There's a great video on Masada Ube's webpage, or it's also on YouTube, I believe. I know you're not much of a revolver shooter yourself, but you have done some episodes about revolvers on your show, and I'd really like to see more episodes if you can find the time to fit them in. I hope you and Ben plan on teaching Beyond Concealed Carry again sometime next year in Arkansas. We got a couple of class after I took it and really talked it up. Don't worry, they're not all revolver shooters. Hey, most of them are even right-handed, too. Thanks for all the great work you do, and keep back. Bye.
All right, Brian, thanks for calling that in. By the way, you might have remembered me saying that, well, he did. He ran his revolver very well in our Beyond Concealed Carry class. And go check out that video that he's talking about on using and gripping and reloading the revolver. Hey, Brian, we will do some more episodes on revolvers. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go ahead and put an invitation out there to listeners. If you would like to interview with me, or if you want to call in a voicemail and talk more about revolver shooting, I think that's something that would be great for the listener base. So get a hold of me. You can email me at bob@handgunworld.com. If you want to send in or call in a voicemail, the number is 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. Or just go to handgunworld.com and click the Call Me button on my website, and it'll automatically connect you with the voicemail. But, you know, hey, revolver shooting, you know, I don't carry a revolver. I probably don't see myself carrying a revolver, except maybe in the future getting a snubby as a backup weapon, as a backup pocket gun mainly, or as a backup appendix carry gun. I know Ben Branham, he loves his Ruger LCR. And I've seen Ben shoot that Ruger LCR, and he does very well with it. And that's his backup gun. I won't carry a revolver as a primary gun. Now, Brian was shooting some pretty big revolvers in the course when he took that with us. But as, you know, most people carry the small snubbies. Matter of fact, a friend of mine called me, and we were talking about, he's probably going to call me later this afternoon. He's trying to help his mother-in-law pick out a gun. And the subject went to revolvers, and I said, yeah, gee, you know what? For a brand new shooter who's never really, doesn't have much gun experience, I just don't recommend those snubby revolvers. Keep in mind, snubby revolvers. I just don't recommend those, especially for new shooters. I don't care if they're men or women. They're very tough to shoot. They're very tough to master. They usually have very hard trigger pulls, and it's hard to master those trigger pulls. And I got a chance to shoot a student's 357 snubby with 357 Magnum loads in it. Okay? It was not fun. After five rounds of shooting 357 Magnums through a snubby, I handed it back to him, and I said, okay, thanks, I'm done. And I'm a pretty decent shooter. I just don't like it. And most people we find just don't like them, unless they are a very accomplished shooter. Now, very accomplished shooters typically like snubby revolvers. Now, I'm not a snubby revolver hater either. There's a place for those guns. Those are a niche gun. There is a place for those, and there are some advantages to a snubby revolver. Okay, there's no slide to push out a battery to disable the gun. Although if somebody does get a good grip on the cylinder, you can prevent that gun from firing. But if you got to jam that into a bad guy's, if the bad guy is like practically on top of you, and you got to jam that into his midsection and press the trigger, or if you got to fire that revolver through a coat or through a cover garment, you're not going to create a malfunction like you would with a semi-automatic handgun. So there are some advantages, but having only five shots with a very heavy recoil and a very heavy trigger that's tough to master, I just think that there's better options out there for most concealed carriers. I'd much rather carry my Smith & Wesson Shield that holds a lot more rounds with good 9mm ammo, that shoots like a big gun. It's a soft-shooting gun. I'd rather carry that. And I can conceal it as a backup weapon just as easily as I could conceal a snubby revolver. So anyway, that's my two cents. But Brian did a great job. And it looks like Brian, at least for the most part, is probably marrying the platform, like I talked about in the previous segment. Same thing with a revolver as with a 1911. You got to marry the platform. I think if you switch back and forth between revolver and semi-auto, and you switch back and forth and switch back and forth, you might create some issues. Now, that's an experiment I have not done. Have you? Maybe if some of you out there have switched back and forth between revolvers and semi-autos, I'd like to hear it. I'd like to hear about it. I think that'd be another good topic for a podcast episode. You know, so contact me or call me if you've got that kind of experience. I don't, but I've shot many times I've shot snubby revolvers. I'm just not that sold on them. But again, Brian was using a full-size revolver, and he did a great job. So, Brian, I do promise you that I will do some more episodes on revolver shooting, and I'm going to start seeking out some folks that have some pretty good experience, because I, for one, do not have a lot of experience behind a revolver. Okay, I am going to wrap up this episode. It's kind of a short episode. Again, I've been super busy lately. I plan on getting some normal length episodes out again pretty soon. I try to stick to 45 minutes to an hour. You know, sometimes you get an hour and a half episode from me, but that's rare. I try to stick to 45 minutes to an hour every week. Your time is valuable. I respect it. Give me 45 minutes to an hour. I should be able to give you, in return, in every episode, one good pearl of wisdom. That's my goal, and I believe that God has blessed me with some good communication skills. You know, folks, my attitude and my skills are not my own. They are blessings from the good Lord in heaven. And I try to use those talents that I've been given to the best of my ability to communicate messages to people like you who listen to my show. So that's kind of what I wanted to say about that. So let's talk about this shooting in Ferguson, Missouri. Ferguson, Missouri, Michael Brown, who was shot by a police officer. Wilson, I think is his name. Darren Wilson, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. You know, here's my frustration with this whole thing. This is almost like a repeat of the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case, only it seems like it's going to get even worse. But here's what I mean by a repeat. I'm thoroughly disgusted by the race baiters that have jumped into this. Long before the facts even came out. I'm not going to speak to the facts of the case much because the facts are still coming out. But so many people are acting like they really know the facts already. You know, lately we've been hearing that Officer Wilson had a fractured orbital eye bone because of a scuffle that he had with Michael Brown. That adds things. That adds a whole different set of circumstances to this whole case, doesn't it? Okay? So, you know, if he had a swollen face and he had an eye bone fracture and things like that, it kind of points to maybe the officer was acting in self-defense. But I'm so disgusted by, I mean, what has our world come to? What has our world come to when we have people that take a tragedy like this? And it really is a tragedy. It's a tragedy that Michael Brown lost his life. And it's a tragedy that this cop was the one that ended his life. There are no winners. There are no winners in this case. None. My sympathy goes out to the Michael Brown family. My sympathy goes out to the officer. I mean, Officer Darren Wilson's life could be ruined forever because of this. George Zimmerman's life is not too good right now. Seems like, anyway. But if Officer Wilson was acting in self-defense, or if the evidence points to that, why do we have people out there that are acting like, well, this was all Officer Wilson's fault and Michael Brown had no part in this? Well, you know, they're making money on it. A lot of people are making money on it. They have agendas. And that's what's bothering me. What's bothering me is the media attention that's being put on this. And they're acting like they already know the case. They already know all the facts. And this is an open and closed case. And we need justice for Michael Brown because he was completely innocent and Officer Wilson was completely wrong. If you don't believe me, just look at some of the reporting. And the protesters, they have no idea. Many of them have no idea what they're protesting about. And it's almost like they've used this not to protest what happened in the shooting, but they're using this to protest other things. Yes, we have a problem We do have a problem with race relations in this country. We have a problem with what goes on in the inner cities of America. We do. And so you have a lot of people that are using this case as an agenda to promote or to bring attention to the racial problems we have in this country, when this whole shooting case probably has nothing to do with race. That's what I want to say. We're probably going to find out that this doesn't have much to do with race. What it had to do with, most likely, is what Officer Darren Wilson felt he needed to do, because Michael Brown was a very, very large man. And Michael Brown was attacking him. Now, that, and again, that's all we know so far. I'm not saying I know the facts of the case either. And I'm not rendering an opinion. Once all the facts come out and the grand jury decides whether they're going to indict and then the whole thing is tried, we may learn something else. We may learn something else. We may learn that Michael Brown was shot for no reason. We might learn that maybe Officer Wilson had a definite reason to act. We don't know yet. I'm tired of the people that act like they do know. Even the governor of Missouri came out and acted like he already knew what happened and he wants swift justice. Well, we all want swift justice, but the justice process happens by learning the facts and letting it all come out. So, folks, everybody, please take a deep breath. You know, some of the stuff I see on Facebook kind of infuriates me. Thank you to Mark from Houston. Mark is a guy that's been through our classes, and Mark is a listener to the show. He made me a dislike button for Facebook. It's not really a button, but I put up on Facebook, hey, I'd like to be able to dislike some of the stuff that I see. So he made me this little picture with a thumbs down sign that says dislike, and it looks like the Facebook thumbs up sign. So I'm going to start using it now. I'm going to put it in the comments. Whenever I see something I don't like, I'm going to go ahead and comment on it. Instead of putting in text, I'm just going to put in the picture of my dislike. Because there's some real junk out there being put out there on Facebook. And, you know, you expect that from social media. After all, it's just social media. I got news for you. If you look into Facebook to get your facts, you're looking in the wrong place. By the way, if you want to follow me on Facebook, just search Handgun World on Facebook. Hey, and you know what? I have two Facebook pages. I have the Handgun World Facebook page, and then I have Bob Main Facebook page. I don't like to talk about guns on my Bob Main page. So if you want to talk about firearms, friend me at Handgun World. Search Handgun World and friend me there. You can friend me at Bob Main on Facebook, but I'm not going to talk about guns much on that page. I just want you to know that. Okay, so let's all take a deep breath. Let's wait. It's kind of like the Clive and Bundy incident that we had not too long ago. People were really injecting their opinions on that before all the facts came out. Everybody was jumping all over the Trayvon Martin George Zimmerman case before all the facts came out. But let's stick to this case. Let's stick to this shooting, shall we? I'd like to say to the people in the media and all the people who are commenting about this, let's not make this about race relations. It's probably not about race relations. This is about a police officer who shot a very, very large 18-year-old man that he thought was a threat to him. And that's all this is about. I don't believe this is about race. I don't believe this is about inner city problems. Now, I could get proven wrong on that. So I'll put this disclaimer out there. If the facts come out that this is about race, then I'll eat my words. Or if the facts come out that this is about an inner city problem, then I'll eat my words. But why is everybody jumping to make it that when we don't really know? And that's what I want to say about that. So, okay, folks, that pretty much kind of wraps up this 293rd episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. Do you have any questions about any of this? If you have any questions about any of this, I would love to get an email from you, bob@handgunworld.com. I would really certainly like it if you'd call in a voicemail, 210-646-1727. Or you can jump on Facebook, or you can get me on Twitter. On Twitter, I'm Handgun World on Twitter. A lot of people send me Facebook questions. You're welcome to do that. I prefer emailed questions, but either way, it's fine because I'm on both of those every day. So, with all that said, folks, thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember that the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. I'll catch you next week. Goodbye.